Hey guys, what's up? This is Your Battle to Win. My name is Jared, and this is a show that I do with my mom, Joni Leckie. And this week, this on Your Battle to Win, we're going to be talking about your role in a bigger win, everything for the win. This will be part one. And just in case you guys are hearing road noise, we are currently on our little family road trip right now. So we do apologize in advance for the road noise, but without further ado, we're just going to dive right in.
All right. So everyone's going through battles. I mean, we all go through battles, and we see that there's, you know, in the natural, it's very evident what kind of things are going on. It makes us upset, or it makes us sad, it's tragic or very hard on us, whatever the battle is. But there's something behind it, right? It's the spiritual nature of it that we've been talking about all the time. Each show, the biggest thing that we really have to do is be able to step back, because in order to win, we really have to really see it and be clear about what we're winning, and that each of these battles have fit into a bigger picture for ourselves, and then a bigger picture for those immediately around us, and then obviously a bigger picture for in the context of where our lives fit into. And a lot of times people aren't thinking about that. They just go to the grocery store. I mean, you know, we all do that. Sometimes not thinking about, really, there's a battle over, you know, all the people that are working to serve so that we have food. There's a bigger battle, and that's just small still, compared to, there's a big context for this thing. So we're going to go over that, you know, that we want to do everything for the win, that we don't want to lose focus. You know, the way that we get bogged down is just looking at really the very obvious portion of the battle. And then we make a decision whether we really want to win it, because it's so difficult. But when we see the context of what it does, not only for ourselves, for our future, but what it does for the people around us, whether we help them win or we help them lose, and then also for the rest of our culture and society in the world. So let's go ahead. And what's some of the thoughts that you have from what we just started on?
I think probably one of the, to me, when it comes to, what I'm getting the vibe from is it's like more or less like not just our involvement with culture, but the way that we, even though these things may seem normal, we still have a big role in that. Not, I want to say activity for lack of a better word, but I guess the way that we are involved in the bigger picture of, you know, our culture and even the world. And a lot of people don't think that what they do matter, or what they don't think what they do, they don't think it matters as much as it really does, because every action we do, it creates a ripple effect. It's going to affect somebody or something somehow in some way, from every little thing that we do, you know. And the first thing could be to be overwhelmed and get extremely technical, which that's not winning, because now you're being bogged down and you're not able to put as much attention to the important things, but the details still are important.
I kind of butchered that.
Well, the thing that's interesting is that obviously we all see everything from a different perspective. So, you know, it becomes difficult sometimes to really understand what is this big picture battle? You know, how can they not see it? Or, you know, how can they just excuse themselves, or how can they do so much right and then still make those mistakes that seem so obvious? So really, the context for what the bigger picture battle is, there's multiple forms. The biggest thing is that I just want to start with is just for ourselves to be able to, you know, when we look at a situation and it's difficult and we wonder, why in the world do I have to face this? Why do I have to deal with this? This seems, you know, someone else should have to deal with this, or nobody else is dealing with it, or whatever we excuse ourselves from doing. But we have to see that the bigger picture for our own personal lives, we have somewhere we want to go. We want to have certain wins. And if we lose sight of that, if we don't realize that this win that we make today, this moment, especially if it's repetitive in nature, if we continue to lose or we continue to battle, that there's significance. Yeah. We want to be free. We don't want to be bogged down.
I mean, you can see that in the example of somebody that, like, you know, they're working out consistently and they're eating all the right things. And then if they allow themselves to backtrack to it, like, and to start eating junk, it's going to make... They may think that one time doesn't affect their body, but it does. Like, I'll notice it myself when I'm eating. Like, it's such a basic analogy, but, you know, everything that you put into your body either builds it up or destroys it. There's... You know, there are some foods that will be like a conflict because they use some good ingredients and some bad, and you know, that's still not good for you entirely, but
some people don't see that, right? So, I mean, I think for some people, because we've paid attention to it, it's very obvious. And then for other people, it's just like, what does that mean? I don't feel any different, or I'm used to not feeling quite, you know, it's normal to go feel tired after I eat. That's normal, right? And they don't realize that that's actually part of the problem of those foods or the state of the digestive system. But that's part of what the spiritual nature of the battle is. If we can't see it and someone else sees it, the first thing we need in order to realize that there's more is the humility and the inquisitiveness, you know, wanting to know, what's that about? What do you mean? Why? Not defensive, or you could be defensive for a little bit, I think, but still have that willingness to say, okay, if I'm in this reoccurring battle, I have either reoccurring health problems, since you started that one, let's just use that as the example, reoccurring health problems or reoccurring way we feel after we eat, or way we look after we eat, or, you know, whatever happens, that, you know, not being able to get out of the bathroom because it takes too long, or not being able to get there fast enough because it's happening too fast.
Oh my goodness.
No, but these are part of evidence that there's something going amiss. But if we don't know that that there is a bigger picture, that the little things are fitting in, then we miss it, and we can go years missing what the battle is, and we can continue to lose. So that's why it's very significant that when we say everything for the win, you know, there are certain things that we do know. So, you know, we're kind of touching on the things that we don't pick up on. That's, you know, what I'm saying. But but first of all, we need to take a look at what we do notice. We need to win those, because we do notice certain things and we continue to lose.
And being able to see those things, like what we do see, is a gift. And like, that God's given us, that we've been given the ability to see those things, because not everybody is going to be able to see the same things that you do. Excuse me. So, like, I feel like when you see something that someone else doesn't, it's kind of like that's your job to help other people grow in that area, to be, you know, more, what's the word? Like, more aware of...
So are you saying, like, something that you noticed but you've already mastered and you've noticed someone else hasn't?
Either that I've mastered or I'm in the process of mastering, or something that's, like, my way that I can do that for somebody else because I'm so knowledgeable in that area. Maybe I might be light years ahead of them and they don't have the time or the resources to be able to learn about what I've done, you know, what I've gotten to the place of... I'm stumbling over myself, but do you get what I'm trying to say here? Like part of the helping me win, me helping someone else win their battle is like, if I'm so far ahead in something that they can't or won't be able to catch up or, you know, build themselves in that area, it becomes my responsibility to help them win that battle in their life.
Right. I mean, I definitely see what you're saying, and I think people can track with that. However, that's not kind of in the same line of just the idea first for us. We have to come to a place for ourselves. I mean, that's important, and we'll touch on that in the next section, right? But really wanting to stay focused first on ourselves, like, what is the bigger picture battle? Why do we have to win it? Why, you know, why is it so hard to win it? And then what are we supposed to do about it? you know, it's key. I mean, we've gone through the specifics of declared wins and the healing traumas and declared wins for others, and, you know, being able to understand the social engineering, just all these different things that we've gone over, mapping the win. And yet, there is more. We have to be able to see from God's perspective, the biggest perspective possible, to see it all, which we really can't. But you look at a physical battle, like, you know, using like Winston Churchill, for example. And, you know, people can say different things about really what was happening in World War II, whether or not, you know, how, you know, it's not for the specifics that I'm saying this. It's more for from the concept that obviously his role, at least the way history, you know, most historians say it, his role was very much one of genius oversight, ability to see, know what's happening in different countries, how different leaders think, what their plans are, what their plans could be, would be, you know, being able to anticipate it. You know, we're talking about it with baseball, what it means to be a great right fielder for one of my sons, and just how much foresight you have to see. You have to be able to, if you're good in that position, you're going to read the body language of the batter.
Yeah.
Know what the pitch is going to be, know your teammates well enough, and be able to anticipate before that ball's even hit what type of situation could be occurring right then. So, you know, so anybody who becomes an expert, so you look at someone like Winston Churchill, for just the sake of that kind of example, on and understanding nations and then understanding his own, you know, what's going on in his own troops, his own country,
yeah,
and strategizing. Well, at the same way, that expertise, baseball, whether it's, you know, a physical, whatever physical situation, that expertise needs to translate into our own expertise for the spiritual battle that we live daily.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to step back and become an expert and see and practice and rehearse with that type of devotion to see the big picture. Because if we don't understand what we're winning our life for, what is that, each of these specific battles, these declared wins that we do, how it fits into, you know, God's big picture for us, then we can lose sight and give up, or stay in the battle too long, or lose and get kicked around, you know, be miserable.
I mean, there's a lot, and with that being said, there are a lot of stories that exist with people that are very phenomenal and very influential in our history, but when it came to their lives, you know, it was falling apart, and some of them ended terribly because they didn't understand, or they didn't ever emphasize the spiritual nature of things. So you have a lot of, I'm trying to think of a good story that's an analogy, but there's tons of stories of people that were extremely successful.
I heard a tragic one that I still remember, and it definitely serves a purpose for me. There's a missionary that went to this one country, unreached country, you know, population, small village, and total heart for these people. And he went there year after year, and they rejected the message of you know, of freedom in Christ Jesus, you know, knowing Jesus and receiving the payment that he made for them. Reject. And he was there years and years, his whole life. And at the end of his life, he was so despairing because he felt it was so purposeless. He felt like his life had no meaning, that he actually ended up taking his life. And then the seeds started to germinate. And the whole village ended up repenting and coming to Jesus and being so thankful to this man. And yet the man, you know, the man could not see it, did not wait long enough to win the entire battle. And so it serves a purpose. The Lord uses it, you know. You know, I would imagine he would have compassion on this man. And yet the personal battle, he couldn't see that he was winning battles, that he needed to have a faith that went, that the Lord was asking of him to have a deeper faith. And then obviously this message goes forth now to the rest of us, it's really impacted me, and I've shared with people and it's really impacted them. The idea that, you know, we are in a battle. We are in a battle for people. And we don't understand, like with Daniel, you know, it took, and Daniel was so devoted, you know, in the book of Daniel, right, that it took 3 weeks And they said that they were battling in the heavenlies over what he was praying about. And he was so devoted. And so maybe if we're not quite as in tune to it, it might take longer. But that is significant, that we need to really seek God and know why this is happening and what he's asking. And definitely the deepest thing is faith.
And I think when it comes, something that I'm understanding about Daniel and what's so important about what he did is that, and I remember hearing a sermon about this as well, Daniel never tried to take anything into his own hands. All he focused on was being faithful with his relationship with God, because he knew that God had already won the battle, and if there's any spiritual contention, all he has to do is put it literally at God's feet, and it would be taken care of. So that's why when they were being threatened to be thrown into the fiery furnace, he was like, okay, like, so be it. Like, if that's what you're going to do because of what I believe, then do it, because my faith is this great that even if he doesn't, then that's part of the purpose of what he's doing. Like, even if he doesn't save us, you know, it's more important that I stay faithful to him than keep my own life. And even the scriptural context of, you know, when he would pray, there'd be battles going on in the heavenlies over what he's praying about. Like, that even shows to me, what that shows is that the battle, he didn't ever take it into his own hands. He put it all completely in prayer first and foremost, and then allowed that to direct his steps in his life.
Yeah, that's really good. Because isn't that when you're battling, is when you don't do that.
And when you, then you're battling on your own with your own hands and your own merit, which you're going to lose every time.
Right, and then you feel, you know.
Then you don't feel strong. Then you feel weak. Then you don't feel like you're empowered. You don't feel. It'll create a downhill cycle. Wherever you're willing to turn, whatever you're willing to give God, is what you're allowing Him to work with in your life. You're going to allow Him to take you to places that you would never think he'd take you, because that's what he wants to be part of our lives. So if you allow him to do that, he'll take the reins, and it'll be awesome.
Okay, so what do you mean by where he'll take you?
Well, I mean, like with Daniel, I mean, he took him out of the fire, he took him out of the lion's den. Like, you know, he'll take, even in the darkest of physical situations, if it's put before him, he'll pull through. That's my understanding of it.
So what you're saying is, right, Daniel won the battle because he had peace, he had faith, he didn't give up.
He won the battle because he chose that the fight wasn't his fight. It was, I mean, yes, he was involved in it, but his role in the fight was to lay it at the feet of God and allow God to work it out. You know.
Right.
But yet, like, we can even talk about when he was first captured and brought to Babylon, they offered him the king's food, and he's like, well, you know, it was kind of, I'm sure culturally back then it's extremely disrespectful to be like, hey, let's get other food, like, that's not any of this at all, let's get
right,
something
here too, right?
Yeah, so it's like, you know, it's obvious, like, but he knew that because of the, I think he, when he, when it comes to, I mean, even back then, understanding nutrition and seeing like God's correlation with it, I'm sure that had something to do with the way he handled that situation, because he was able to do it. He was able to request that on the behalf of not just him, but his entire like friends and his group of people that were with him. So
you're saying obviously that his win was being able to know that the Lord had already won it for him,
yeah.
Was there for him. But what was his battle to win? What did he win? What did he win to get to that place?
I don't know. It's kind of interesting because to my understanding of, correct me if I'm wrong, but when I've read Daniel, I haven't necessarily seen his, the process that it took to him to get to that maturity. It's kind of just when the story picks up, it's after he was, like, captured and already pretty much, you know, grown up some
So he was already ready. He was like packaged, ready to go.
I don't think anybody is perfectly packaged and ready to go, but I think something had happened where he had been made, where he had learned something beforehand that allowed him to be at that place where he could just be at complete peace with what God is doing with his life.
So that was the battle, right? He won a battle to be at peace. He won a battle to have faith in God himself, to trust God so fully, right?
Yeah.
So that's the battle. They're doing road construction here. No one's falling asleep, if you could hear that. So
we're recording this in broad daylight, so we hope nobody's falling asleep.
So the idea is the bigger picture battle to win is that we're going through whatever it is to equip us to be at total peace no matter what happens, that the enemy could do anything. Isn't that what that shield of faith is? To extinguish all the fiery darts, right, of the evil one. Extinguish all the fiery darts. So the big picture battle, I mean, it's really perfect that you brought that up, is the idea that Daniel spent time with the Lord. He spent time at his feet. He didn't just drive by pray, like run by the Lord, playing in front of the Lord. Like, this is how I see it sometimes with me when I'm praying.
Drive by prayer.
I'm having fun. I'm just like, yay, Lord, you know what? By the way, this and this and this, and you know, I'm going around.
No.
Exactly. And then, you know, and then he was showing me, and I could see the difference between being really serious and sitting at his feet to know the answer, to not just throw up the prayer, not just to like be so happy that I am free in him, you know, able to just talk to him anytime and run around and take care of things. But if I really want to know and I really want to grow, it's at his feet, right? It's sitting there and hearing what he has to say. And you know that all the things that you were saying, right? That's what Daniel did. Daniel spent 3 times meditating and praying and speaking with the Lord. He's very diligent. He was very knowledgeable. So he also studied culture and what was going on. He was like a Winston Churchill kind of concept. He was very aware of very many things. I mean, he made himself into something very prepared. That's winning battle after battle after battle, to have discipline. All the character traits of God is the battle, right?
Yeah.
So when we're losing battles, that's not to be down on ourselves to lose. We're up against a real enemy. And you know, unless those around us, last time we talked about, you know, assembling our, you know, allies, it's the idea that We need help to win these battles. We need the Lord's help. We need the Word. We need people that understand what's going on in the battle. And meanwhile, when we don't have that, we need a heart that hungers and thirsts after God himself, right?
Yep.
And that's what Daniel displayed. And then that's our portion of this win. We have to see the bigger picture, because there's other battles coming, right? There's other battles coming. Daniel had other bigger battles that were coming, and this was huge. This wasn't just for himself. So he had to win those battles for himself, but now the battle becomes for the king. It becomes for his allies that are around him. They're all there together, teaming together. It's for the whole, you know, country. And then obviously it's for us, because we're actually reading the story. So it continues. So, you know, that's a real good, just quick overview of what we're talking about.
Yep. I don't have any additional comments. Like, it's really solid. But one thing that I did note, one thing that's worth observing is Daniel even was so consistent with his prayer time, to the point where even, like, I guess everybody knew about it. Even though it never says that he talked about it, it always says that, I mean, it got to the point where when they made the, they made the law decreeing that nobody could pray to anybody else but to, what's his name? I forgot the ruler's name.
Nebuchadnezzar.
Before, like, when they made that law, like, they actually were able to, like, know what time he was going to pray to God, and, like, sit there and be like, okay, like, is that what he's going to do? Because, like, that's how that was all set up. So his relationship with God was so consistent to the point where it was designated. It was a designated time. That's something that I noticed and want to throw out there.
Okay, so from the idea of, I mean, we have a lot of range of experience or listeners or even in our own life when, you know, certain times we get it and certain times we don't understand how it all fits together. I mean, even the same things we talk about, and then they get deeper meaning. So maybe put it in a context, you know, we brought it into a very scriptural presentation of this, but maybe make some transition for people who don't necessarily see it from, like, see it from this, how does, you know, this Bible study really, you know, this word from Scripture really, you know, translate? Like, can you put it in other terms?
You mean, like, how would I put it into my own life?
Yeah, maybe into your own life or something that's not as, I mean, it's you know, we come from the perspective that we definitely say it's the Lord working, and, you know, that those Sunday school stories that we had actually are held so much power for us to win our battles. But transition it for, you know, there's things that they say that the natural man sees that they can't see the spiritual. Then the spiritual things are spirit because they're spiritually appraised. But so part of it was, I mean, like I've said to you, it's taken me, I've prayed consistently to understand what the weapons of warfare are and what the spiritual nature of this battle is for 30 plus years. And really, really this year, really being able to see it much clearer. I mean, I saw stages of it more clearly, but really, really, you know, where we can talk about it like this, right? Where we've talked about it as a family and light bulbs go on in all of us, right? So, you know, so when it's taken me this long dedicated to it, then I understand how people, like, I don't get it. What are you talking about? Like, what does that mean? So how do we transition people to understand that the bigger picture win for them is spiritual in nature? It takes the character that we need, but maybe let's figure out how we can say it in different terms than just about Daniel or you know, even our stories coming from a scriptural standpoint. How else can we put it to transition from a natural way of thinking to a desire to have it spiritually appraised, the desire to understand it? You know, it doesn't necessarily need to take 30 years, but if it did, would it, you know, would that be worth it? Worth it to win the battles?
I say, well, to that last part, I would say it's definitely worth it, because it's being able to see and analyze, well, not analyze, but to be able to see and perceive things in the spiritual realm is very, very important. And when you're able to do that, you're able to see a lot more dynamics in just the way people behave too. Like when I started really tuning into the spiritual side, I started being able to perceive, you know, conversations better. I was able to perceive motives better. I was able to perceive, I was even able to perceive where I was lacking in my own life more. Just because, like, you're able to see where your spiritual part of you really has a huge influence on what happens physically. Because of, you know, I believe that the physical is a representation of what happens in the spiritual. So so I guess the next question then is, how do you develop your spiritual eyes to be able to see those things? And I think the first step would be a willingness to see with your spirit, with spiritual eyes. Because if you're not going to be willing to acknowledge or try to emphasize or understand it, then you're not going to be able to, because you don't want to. It's literally something that you have to, it's like it's with your physical eyes. If you have them closed, you're not going to know what's out there. Right? You have to actually wake up, open your eyes, and be like, oh, look, that's a red car. And it's moving at, like, you know, that's, or a black truck that just goes right by you like that. But, like, you know, you wouldn't be able to fully understand what's going on if your eyes were closed, though. You wouldn't even be able to drive on a road if your eyes were closed.
Or paying attention. I mean, some of it's paying attention. Like, we're driving along and my husband's saying, you know, your dad's saying, you know, oh, look at this bar that they have on the front. Did you notice that? And I'm like, no. On a two lane, you know, they're coming at us. And I didn't even look at the front grill of the semis that were coming by. And he was saying, you know, what they were for. You know, obviously the animals, hitting animals and not messing up the frame. But I didn't see them. We're driving by the same things. I'm not paying any attention, so I don't see it. So the thing is with the spiritual, what you're saying is obviously the willingness to look.
Yeah.
And then...
and what you've practiced looking at, because the spiritual realm is so much more dynamic than the physical realm. There's so much more to perceive and... excuse me. You have to know what you're looking at and looking for, you know.
Right. And it, you know, it's the allies. So obviously you have your family as an ally. We all work together really talking about and trying to understand... you know, I'm praying through, Lord, you know, what don't we see here? Why is this happening? So those are other ways, right, to even obviously pray and ask and then discuss with other people. But really there has to be, just like everything that we master, has to be a hunger and a thirst to give everything to win the battle.
Yeah.
So the idea that everything for the win, you know, really, if you're struggling to win, whether it's a football team or a baseball team or, you know, at work, whether the company's going to survive, it's everything for the win. And then we have to know what that means. You know, it can't be corruption. It can't be greed or egocentric. The win comes from, in that, like the Daniel, back to that scriptural representation of everything for the win. I'm going to give my whole life to what is good. I'm going to give my whole life to truth.
Yeah.
Well, to God himself. Yeah. I mean, that's ultimately, right?
Absolutely.
But I wanted to paint the picture for those who may not say first, I want everything for God. Maybe everything first in their heart says everything for truth, everything for good. But that leads to the one who made good and truth. And no, you know, the idea is, you know, we do all have a different perception, but we you know, we win as we understand what those perceptions can be, what those perceptions really are to the one who made us, or even to other people, so that we can see from their eyes what they see that the Lord has shown them. I think those are some of the things that we need a lot more humility in our community, so that we can get to a better idea of what the bigger picture is.
I mean, I'm sure that because Daniel wasn't the only one that was captured from his hometown, I'm sure that he and his friends had, like, they had very good relationships with each other, where they were able to like converse with each other about what they were seeing in the spiritual and be able to help each other see more. And that's why when the story of with the Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Daniel in the fiery furnace, or it was just those, was it just those three? It was just three of them?
Three and Daniel.
Okay.
The fourth one, shining like a sun. The sun.
Yeah, so I think it may have just been, I don't know. But anyways, like, they had already conversed with each other to the point where, like, they all understood what was happening and how to handle it. Like, They were all on the same page with understanding with what was about to happen. Like, they could all see it with the spiritual eyes, what was going down. And,
you know, so that's, you know, maybe into a modern example, some of the listeners, you know, have followed. But same thing with what happened in Malheur County, Oregon, with the Bundys and the Hammonds, and, you know, the conversations that went on beforehand, and the seriousness of the decisions they made, the gravity of knowing that they could be thrown into the fiery furnace, which is, you know, really where they are right now, still in surrender to the Lord, and just watching the peace that they have and the growth that they continue to have and the fight that they have for truth, you know, for the establishment of the revealing of things that aren't correct. Same kind of thing, you know, a little different situation.
Yeah, it was only the three of them that got thrown in the furnace.
So we have a few more of them thrown into the furnace right now with the Malheur County thing. And then, you know, Lavoie losing his life, being willing to lay it down, and then what the families are going through. So these things are actually happening. We have, you know, situations right now of being willing to lay down our lives, being willing to give it all for what is truth or what is right, what is good, what is honest, what is pure, and realizing that, you know, we face a lot of different types of corruption right now that a lot of people don't think can be reversed, right? So when we talk about now the bigger picture, being able to know what we fit into it, our role may not be to do what they're doing, but we have a specific role, right? Our battle, not to bring other people down, you know, to our battle to understand the word and how it applies, you know, just really for myself coming to really understand the idea that do not judge lest you be judged by that same measure. And we don't see it usually for years, but there's a lot of bitterness people have towards people that, you know, are doing what's wrong either intentionally or not intentionally, for instance, within the government. But that judgment that is brought, that people bring against these other people, is not creating a win. It's, were you going to say something?
Yeah, it's just I'm thinking, like, I'm applying that. That's something that I'm really applying right now, is because, like, I'm learning it's more important to go out of your way to actually acknowledge the problem than it is to continue to be bitter about it. I'm trying to figure out a way that I can put this into light, even though it's kind of a personal situation. I'm learning that it's more important to, even though you feel like you're the one being wronged, if there's a way that you can diffuse and dilute the situation, or not diluted, because that gives it a sense of it being watered down, but more or less, like, I guess,
There's a proverb that says it's to our glory to overlook a matter.
Yeah.
Okay, so what does
it's
that
not,
do?
It's not exactly overlooking, right. It's more or less, okay. but it's having the ability of, even though you're the one being wronged, you're not going to lash out or be bitter secretly to that person.
Right, so it's not overlooking evil, no. But it's overlooking to the sense that vengeance is the Lord's.
It's overlooking,
right?
That it's the, like, instead of attacking the person, you're attacking the problem. And being able to make that very distinguishable and clear, like, to me, what's helpful is having people in my life that are able to see situations that way and are willing to, you know, fight alongside you. I guess it goes back to our last talk with having the right allies, because if you don't have the right allies, then you're not going to be able to tackle these situations properly. And especially when a situation gets to the point where you feel like you can't address somebody directly and you need another person to be able to intercede on your behalf, to talk to that person because you know that they'll do a better job at it than you, especially if you've already confronted that person once and they're continuing that, like, you, it's, see, I mean, it's even biblical to either you meet with another person to meet with this person, or you have that person go and talk to them. And so that's the stage that I'm at right now in this particular situation. But it's definitely, like, and people do notice that your intentions when it comes to handling a situation based upon even the way that you talk to them about it. Because for me, I don't want to create a division with this problem. I want to be like, hey, yo, like, this is what you're doing here is creating friction, and I don't want that, you know?
Right.
So.
Right. So normally we would break for commercial, but since we are not in the studio, we will continue just so, and kind of go into a little more depth. And I have a story I'd like to tell about your other brother who plays football, and just seeing this opportunity, which was still, we're still in the middle of it, but last week there was a, we had a game, right? You weren't there, but it was interesting because the game, we were against one of the rivals. It's JV, so it wasn't the same as the game the next day with the varsity homecoming against the same school. But this situation was, you know, we were ahead, and by three touchdowns, then two touchdowns, then then 3 touchdowns again. Then all of a sudden we lost by a touchdown, right? So, but what happened was, you know, there are a lot of mistakes. It's JV, and, you know, your brother, you know, this is his first year playing quarterback. And so they didn't have really another quarterback. So, I mean, they do, but your brother is, you know, he's perceptive and he's got a good arm. So the whole team did well. I mean, they struggled this year, but they've continued to get better. And this was the best game that they played. However, because there was some excitement and glory there as they pulled ahead and were ahead, one of the coaches, or actually a couple of coaches, became very livid and, you know, carried on and on. And then after the game, carried on and on, and was really critical of the kids. And but in reviewing it, so I wasn't upset. One of the other mothers was upset, said she was already calling the AD, and she's done this for a while because of how things get handled. But this, you know, this is our first, maybe not the first, the second year of really, but the first year really getting to understand how these coaches think. But the idea is, in this battle, you know, I watched your brother amazingly hold together while he was one of the ones just lashed into and you know, yelled at the top of their lungs, right, at him for something that he actually was doing in humility and really was trying to help the coach. The coach didn't want to hear it, didn't see it, didn't understand at all what his perspective was, right? But to watch him understand the spiritual nature of the battle and what his role is, right, in surrender. The thing is he's beginning to see it spiritually. You know, I'm beginning to see it more and more clearly spiritually. And to, you know, it looked like, okay, we are making mistakes. So, you know, but as we put the pieces together, it was evident that, you know, even with all those mistakes, that was the best game they played, because the other team won on putting in a varsity running back. So all the touchdowns, except for maybe one, were all scored by the varsity running back, who just, you know, made it really lopsided, ran, was able to run touchdown, you know, like 40 yards, you know, 70 yards, you know, things like that. So, but the idea is that unless you can see the bigger picture, you jump to conclusions. And I guess the astonishment is to see that somebody who's an expert more than I am could not see that. Could not see it, got so focused in on, I guess, the hope that they would have won, and then all the mistakes that were made. But they really weren't that big of mistakes, and they were playing against a varsity player running back that, you know, was really tearing it all up for the other team. So my point is that from this natural place, so the whole idea of the natural and the spiritual, and understanding the bigger picture battle that's going on, if we get too caught up in just the fine, small portion of the details, we lose sight of major opportunities for victory that we are up against an enemy who wants to steal, kill, and destroy and distract us from winning. And that often we are actually winning, but we don't even see it. So, because the objective is to obviously get these JV players to be varsity next year and very competent and be able to win. And there are so many opportunities for the coaches to really highlight all the ways that they did excellently. And so afterwards, you know, like I said, one of the mothers came up and she was upset and she was saying all this stuff, but I had no negative emotions. I mean, I watched it. I actually filmed it because I was like wanting to see how your brother responded. I wanted to see what the coaches were doing and kind of have that there for him if he wanted to see it. You know, it was very emotional, so I don't think he'll want to see that. But it was incredible, the victories that were won. And the idea that there's this bigger picture, oh my goodness, I could see so clearly that even with what mistakes that I felt the head coach and the, you know, these coaches were making, this was so important for, you know, for your brother to go through, because what a better player he would be, you know, as a result of being able to bear up. Because we talked about, okay, you know, how did you feel when he was yelling? And now he said he was really panicked. He was panicked the rest of the time. He held it together really well and played fairly well the rest of the way out, not as well as he would have. But
But
the idea is we win battles for each other and we lose battles for each other and we make it harder for each other. And then if we can overcome it, like he was able to overcome it for the coach, and I'm hoping I overcame stuff for the coach, because I do plan on talking with the athletic director, but from a very positive standpoint, you know, one kind of how I've described it here, the opportunities that could be there so that things get better. So, so the idea that vengeance is the Lord's, it's not ours. So it's not my place to be angry at the coaches, because those coaches are under pressure and they have things to learn, and we don't understand why they reacted the way they did, and maybe longstanding they were treated that way too. So we have battles to win for them. We have battles to win for this entire team, because they really deflated all of them, yet they fought till the end.
Yeah.
Even under all of the extra, you know, pressure and the panic, the word panic that my son used. So did that example, does that help paint a picture?
Yeah.
Do you want to make it, if I miss things or make things clearer for them?
I mean, you pretty much hit it on the head for me. I was able to understand that, but I would say that it is the most difficult thing, though, is when everything around you is not going the way you want it to, and you have the ability to either continue to stick it out, to do, you know, stick it out and be do, like, dial in even more, or to just let it fall apart. You know, it's in these moments where you don't want to keep going that really shows your character, that I've learned that, like. And another thing too is knowing when it's appropriate to actually to back down, or when it is to fight harder, you know, both in terms of an athletic sense and in the real life sense of rigor.
Okay, so back down meaning what?
Well, not having to be right, not having to be the top dog, not having to be the best, not having to be competitive. You know, there's, I mean, even if you do believe that you are the best and you could totally, you know, knock somebody else down, or not knock someone else down, but just show them, like, that whole show them who's boss, not necessarily mentality or heart, but that concept, you know, of like, I gotta prove to everybody I'm the best, I guess. There's a time and a place for that, but knowing when it's not is just as, if not more, important.
Right, so is that a battle? Is that a battle for someone to win?
Oh, yeah. And to me, I'm just learning that as long as you do your best, and you know, like, because sometimes it's not worth being the best to deflate another person at the expense of it. Because at the end of the day, too, you'll end up deflating yourself, because it's just not worth everybody's perception of you being better.
Well, okay, so then do you see there are multiple battles within a battle? And that's good that you just brought that up, because that's one of the things we want to definitely cover and keep front and center, because I've noticed that people don't quite understand. Sometimes they think it's an all or nothing. You're either losing or you're winning, but you can win and be...
You can win without having to have the most numbers on the scoreboard. Because sometimes being, like... And obviously in athletics, you want to do your best, period. Like, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about more or less in dynamics in terms of relationships with people. Because it's never a competition of person versus person. It's a competition versus who's gonna stick to their morals the best, and who's gonna be the most humble with the other person, who's going to be the most, like, level-headed about the situation. It's not, because it's never about escalating yourself above somebody else. Even if your position and your role is one of authority, don't ever misuse that, and because you will actually lose credibility with that social position or social status.
I'm sure we can think of a couple examples, but the one that pops into mind is the two women running, and they tripped in the Olympics. One tripped over the other, and the other stopped and helped her up. And then she had hurt herself, so they went and finished the race together, yeah. Right? Something they've trained for. I mean, there's many, you know, for a long time they've devoted a lot of time. And then you see what's more important. You see humility instantly, right? No bitterness outwardly. You know, inwardly, I don't know if there was bitterness, but there could have been, you know, sorrow. And yet, a bigger win, right? Because there's a bigger picture that we fit into, right? So the purpose of winning in sports, for instance, fits into a bigger context, right? There's something else going on. I'm watching the football, the varsity, two nights ago or whatever, play. And just seeing, you know, we have a new coaching staff, new varsity coaching staff. And so just seeing them and how, you know, how much leadership is there over all these kids. I mean, it seems obvious, but I never really stopped to think of it from a football perspective. You know, baseball I have and basketball, but, you know, just seeing how many more kids are obviously out there for football. And there's a bigger battle to win. And a lot of the coaches have that sense, but then they can lose it because, you know, there's another battle. There's battles within the battle. Battle to keep focus, battle to keep edifying, battle to know how to discipline when there's so much distraction going on, so many people, the dynamics of so many things going wrong. You know, so you can be winning and losing at the same time, right?
Yep.
So
you may be winning on the scoreboard, but you could be losing, like, you know, a lot of dynamical stuff.
Right? But not even, like, totally independent of the scoreboard, not even thinking about the scoreboard, just thinking, you know, really able to win, winning in that you're even there coaching because you love the kids, losing because all of a sudden you're losing it and you're screaming at the top of your lungs, right, and saying, you know, things that were inappropriate, especially because he wasn't willing to hear the reason why, you know. And I understand that concept of no excuses, but then, you know, right now I've been really prayerful on the idea that, you know, the pardon that we're given to enter into eternity that we don't deserve because we're all unrighteous, you know, we all are unholy at some level, is a pardon. That pardon is, we're excused. So, you know, where is no excuses, and where is it that those excuses are really, are being excused, and understanding how to excuse each other is very important, and with the idea of forgiveness. What do you think?
I agree. It makes... I mean, there's not much I can add to that. That's very, to me, it's a very complete thought.
Well, okay, wait. Wait, I'm not sure you followed me then, because I didn't think it was complete
maybe,
enough.
Maybe not.
Well, okay, so the idea that we don't want to make excuses for what we do, but at the same time, there are reasons, and that we want to have compassion and we want to grow. And so what idea in terms of winning the battle... requires us to see why we're not winning it and how to excuse ourselves without not going forward. You know, excuse, not to be excused and yet to know you need to do it better. Like, I can pardon those coaches for yelling.
Yeah.
But
still knowing that they shouldn't be yelling at the top of their lungs like that.
Yeah, so I can excuse them. And that maybe I should or should not make an excuse for them.
Well,
they had a hot, rough night.
What's the difference between excusing and forgiving?
Right. Right. That's what,
like,
I'm saying.
Because, like, for me, like, I can forgive somebody, but I'm not going to, like, if it's that big of a deal, I'm not going to excuse it. Like, you still need to address it, and I'm going to make you address it. Like, that's, to me, that's important.
Okay, so let's use them for an example, then. The idea that, okay, they didn't want to hear an excuse from, you know, from your brother. They didn't want to hear why he did what he did, right?
Yeah.
So they didn't want any excuses. They didn't want to hear anything that would excuse him from what they felt was criminal, right? They thought was just the horrendous. Like, and really in the context of it, things that really wasn't really as major as they really even felt it was. But they felt slighted. They felt dishonored or whatever I'm not sure what it was. So so from our standpoint, like, they did not excuse him, but yes, they need to make a change. But do I excuse them for being under pressure that they lost it, that they couldn't see it, that they couldn't see that the kids were doing better than they've ever done, and that they just had the other team just put their varsity running back, one of them, in to make score every touchdown, or at least all of but one, maybe. I can't remember. That's just what it was. But you know.
Yeah.
So you know, maybe we go into that later, but the idea that everything we want to do everything for the win, and it takes us really understanding these things to a detail. What does it take to win? You know, the battle to win is multiple. The battle is for these kids to get edified, these football teammates, all of them, and the coaches too, everyone to grow and be edified and have a great season and have a great experience, so that, you know, everyone becomes better people for their adulthood, for the kids, right? And that does make a difference, because these are examples on how to behave or how not to behave. And there, and then strength and weakness comes based upon a lot of other factors outside of football, inside the home, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, to the idea of the bigger picture win, I mean, am I painting a good picture of the idea that there are so many aspects of why we need to win, why that coach needs to win, and even though he didn't win then what is it our role as the parents to help him win? Is it to say, you know, get rid of him? Or is it, well, that's what the some of the people were saying. Or is it to say, we need to help him win this battle? And how do we do? Is it only in prayer? Is it in discussion with the AD, which is what I feel I need to do after praying, in a very positive way, the kind of the way we've talked here, and see what happens?
Because you can't just, like, I mean, I don't know the track record of this coach, but I would say, like, you know, it's many conflicts should be able to get resolved with a conversation. Like, I mean, and I was thinking about this too. I'm like, if I was that coach, and that was my end result after all that, and then having regardless of having people telling me whether or not that, you know, my kids were playing the best that they could at that, or that was their best game ever. This is okay. So I'm gonna switch it up a little bit. So back when I was playing baseball in high school, even though we were played on a charter school team, we wanted to, you know, our goal was to win state every year. Like, and we were good enough of a team to do that. And when we would have games where we would, like, just totally screw up everything, like, maybe we would still win, but our coach wouldn't be happy with how many mess ups there would be. And he, like, he wasn't the yelling type of coach, but if we made him yell, he would do it. But, like, most of the time, sometimes it'd be the next day at practice. Sometimes it'd be right after the game. Sometimes it'd be right after the next day of practice. Sometimes it would be after, you know, the next game. He would come to a resolution and apologize for, you know, for raising his voice, and, you know, he'll always tell us, like, there's no excuse for that, for him yelling, but at the same time, there's no excuse for us to be messing around, like, you know, messing up like that, which, as a team, it brought us closer together and made us really want to continue to play better, because we understood that him yelling was not him trying to be mad at us on purpose, but it's him wanting the best for us. So when you have that type of dynamic, that's what you want to see. And from what I'm understanding with this situation with this coach, I don't think there is any, from what I'm seeing, there's no, like, intonation or desire from the coach to want to, he's not yelling at them to make them do better. I could be wrong, so don't quote me on that, but
well,
that's what I'm perceiving based upon what I'm understanding.
Yeah, I mean, it's only because the one mom that came up to me, I mean, I talked with, there was some other dynamics, but the one mom that, this is her third son playing on the team, so she's known this coach for a while, okay. So there's some room for some improvement. The idea is it's a good example for us to see that we all have battles. It created a battle, obviously, you know, everybody's dynamics. The kids not winning battles, you know, he was upset because a lot of the kids weren't taking the game seriously. You know, they've had that problem, you know, all season. So, You know, so he was upset with kids like that. So they're losing battles. So they're not helping him win battles. So now he's fighting, you know, demons or, you know, things of maybe performance, too much need to perform, right? Or whatever. I mean, I'm not sure what the things are, but we get temptations to basically not win, right? We get temptations to not win, and people make it harder for us, or they make it, because they're either winning or losing their battles. So if they're winning their battles, they make it easier for us to win our battles. If they losing battles, it makes it easier. And we all do that with each other, for each other, and against each other, right? The idea of how we succeed or not. And so it becomes really important that we begin to really back up and see the bigger picture. That our win is important for us. It is absolutely, you know, obviously critical for the moment. It's important for our future. You know, the kids that aren't performing as hard as they could, it affects them now. It affects their coaches now. It affects how everyone feels about each other. If they get yelled at like that, it affects whether or not they win or lose a game, maybe. It affects how they may be as a coach, as an adult then, because of a loss that they've had, and now they've treated this way, now they act a certain way. It affects us as the parents. You know, it, for me in this situation, it actually, I feel, produced some wins for me. You know, it gave me, it was opportunity for me. It was opportunity for your brother. I really got to see him be successful at certain things. You know, battle not to cry, not to be overly discouraged, because he was very discouraged. He's hard enough on himself. Yeah. Right? Didn't want to disappoint the coach. Was really wanting to, when the coach yelled at him, he was actually trying to help the coach. He was actually trying to cover some mistakes that the coach, you know, admittingly had made before. So he was trying to help, wasn't sure, you know, he only had a couple, he didn't have any opportunity to confront it. He had to make a decision. Yeah. So it was a decision out of leadership that he was trying to make. So, you know, so, but the thing is that it is all of our own battles to win. My battle to win, you know, your brother's battle to win, the coach's battle to win, every team player, and yet we do influence each other to make it harder or easier.
Yeah.
So, you want to add some to this? Because it's really, you know, if you have some examples, do we want to, you know, make some examples for how it fits into the world picture? You know, the idea that how could football, for instance, let's use this example still. How can this football thing make a world impact? What does this have to do with the bigger community? This was just one game, for instance. How does the win or loss, the battle, create a harder win, a harder battle later, or an easier one later? And what is that? Does it need to be easier, or does it just need to be won? What are some of your thoughts?
Well, I feel like Josh did a really good job of, like, staying level-headed, even though from what I was hearing, it was like, in his mind, he was not level-headed at all. Like, it's just a conflict. But I think it does make an impact on the coach, because Josh wasn't ignoring him. You know, you saw that. Josh wasn't ignoring him. He was acknowledging everything he was saying, but he was trying to maintain a level-headedness. And I think with life, part of the spiritual battle is, let's say we're in a position where life is literally screaming at us everything that we've done wrong and messed up, and for us to continue to maintain a level-headedness and continue to understand, okay, like, you know, and be willing to listen to the people around us that are saying, hey, like, you're doing a really good job for what you have right now, like, keep that up, like, that it's super important. And the next thing too is, like, it truly, the scoreboard doesn't matter. What matters is you doing your best every single time. If we want to go into the motivational sports quote.
Well, no, but the scoreboard does matter.
It does, but...
Why play the game and keep score? The scoreboard does reflect something, right?
Yeah. But if you're not... Like, if the way that you're matched up, like... Well, what I'm saying is...
It doesn't tell the whole story.
It doesn't tell the whole story. And I'm saying that even though your team may be losing, doesn't mean that you're not playing your best. And it doesn't mean that just because your team's winning that you shouldn't continue to play your best. That's what I was trying to say.
Okay. And I am wanting to help.
And you can apply the analogy of team to yourself. Because just because you're winning doesn't mean that you give up. And just because you're losing doesn't mean that you're not give, like, that your efforts aren't being shown. Because there's a time and a place for your victories to be known.
Right, because there are victories, there are multiple victories that could be won, right? And then there's multiple losses that can be occurring at the same time that you're winning something, right? I mean, that's a really important point that I'm wanting, you know, I think this all makes it obvious, yeah. Right?
I mean, and it's crazy, too, the way the sports are, like you could be dealing with something in the back of your mind the entire game and still win or lose, nobody knows that was going on.
Right.
Like, I think that's not just for sports, thing. It's right? Like, yeah, that's the, like, to me, that was always the craziest thing about baseball. It's like, I could be having the worst day at home, show up to the game, and, like, have to work to block that all out the entire time and still, you know, end up winning the game only to have to come right back home and deal with everything again. Like, that's, even that dynamic is just crazy to me. Like, it's just weird how sports, like, are such a good parallel. And it's just, wow.
Because there's a lot of dynamics going on, and you can see it for yourself, and so I think you have more compassion with other people when you don't know all the dynamics behind what's going on.
Yeah.
So they may look like they're losing, but maybe they're really winning.
And that's the thing, with the way that things are now, I'm sure it's been like this the entire time, but especially in this age, like, someone could be quiet and laying low, but they could be doing some of the biggest things, like, taking care of the biggest things that you've never thought that they'd be the type of person to do. So, like, and that comes back to, like, for me, always, one of the spiritual battles is just to maintain treating everybody the same, regardless of whether or not they do more or less than you. And even if you learn something about them that's not what you expect them to be, still being able to treat them the same as you did without even knowing that. And so what it comes down to is, for me, is just treating people the way that they ought to be treated, you know.
Well, okay, so what happens if they're, this is, I'm not talking about the football situation, I'm talking about, like, you know, when we see absolute corruption in, like, what happened with Wells Fargo. I mean, how do you treat that equally? What do you mean by what you're saying?
Well, I was talking about more or less like personalities and individual, like, I guess you would say, I don't want to say character flaws, because obviously the way someone's character, that will affect the way that they get treated, because, you know, you don't want something falling through those cracks, but I guess, I mean, not being disrespectful towards them. And I think with, if we were going to go my opinion about the Wells Fargo thing, like, that's theft. That's an actual, that's a crime. You can't walk away from that. Like, I don't think yelling at somebody is a crime. So, like, even though they may be, like, that may be, they may be in the wrong for that. Like, that's, I can still, I may have a, I may perceive him differently, but that doesn't mean that if I'm going to go talk to him about him yelling at, if it was my, or my brother, if I was to have a conversation with him, I would not treat approaching him differently than if I was approaching another person that I needed to talk to about something important. Does that make sense?
Right. No, I think I understand what,
like,
you're saying.
They're two different, they're entirely different situations.
Well, it's on a continuum, right? So on the continuum, one's a lot more serious. But part of my point is, the point I'd like to kind of highlight on the idea that what happens matters, whether we win battles or not. Because, you know, these people that have done things that are criminal were, you know, somewhere along the line, they increasingly thought it was okay. And it could be, and like I said, I really didn't want to put this together with the football thing. So, but let's use, I mean, anything. The poor examples that are there help people lose battles all along the way. And not having the strength of character or the wisdom or the insight, or maybe not being not having the allies, right? The allies to help win those other victories create losses. I mean, that happens, let's say on the football team. The idea that not having allies and feeling down and feeling defeated can actually expose somebody to the demonic portion of things, increase the temptations to live on the negative side, the evil side, the corrupt side, or something like that, right? So that's what I'm meaning, is that we don't realize that all of our battles help people win or help people lose. And the more that we actually help people win, then obviously we are affecting things in the spiritual realm. You know, they say that you can tell what a culture is going through by how dark or light their art is or their music and things like that. So definitely things are going on in people, and there's a move, and it moves together so that there's a win, winning, building off of each other.
Yeah. That's a very interesting, the concept about the art will tell a lot about the culture, because the artists, they can only be inspired by what's around them. Like, that's where their inspiration comes from, whether it be something they see or something they experience. All their art comes from what's around them.
Or, well, you know, or their time with the Lord, you know, the Holy Spirit. But yeah.
That's another environment that they're in.
I figured that's what you had in your mind also, but it didn't come out.
Yep.
So, would be nice for a couple commercial breaks so people don't have to just hear us the whole time. Can get up and do some dishes or whatever, but...
do your chores.
Yeah. So, the edification we want from this show is, you know, for us to really be able to see a bigger picture, continue to keep it front and center, especially when we get caught up in the minutiae, right? When the coach could not see the bigger picture, that the kids were actually better. If that one running back wasn't playing for them, they would have won, like, by a long shot. So, you know, he was not able to see it because he got so caught up that then he made himself look bad. Both the two coaches made themselves look bad. And then, you know, disheartened these kids that were fighting so hard to do so well. So we have to see that we get like that. All of us get like that. All of us get caught up into something that's like not right. You know, we get deceived. I mean, that's the spiritual nature of the battle. We are getting deceived by evil forces, by demonic things, by things that we've let in our past and now are easier for us to assume or to behave a certain way. So, you know, so the purpose of this is obviously to keep the bigger picture for us in mind, not only for our own selves, but then for our families. That's so important, because we definitely want to help each other in the family to win, because that strength, you know, creates so much more to even go out on the team. Like, Josh can handle a lot because we've battled here at home. We're praying for the football team. We're praying for his baseball team. You know, those types of things. So he has allies that help him, that in the hardship, he can stand up a little stronger in all the sorrow, all the pain, because it was definitely painful for him. And we all feel that. So it's everything for the win, finding allies, being an ally, being there for each other, understanding that we are either helping others to win or even helping others to lose, and it could be parts of both. It could be, you know, doing, you know, winning and losing at the same time. But we have battles to win, and we want everything for the win, and we want it for, you know, for the big picture too. So.
Yeah.
I guess that wraps it up. Is that your final thought in its entirety, or?
Yep.
Okay.
I feel like it's a good place to leave this one. We'll go again next week on everything for the win. Go a little bit deeper on the idea.
Part 2.
Yes, part 2.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for tuning in. This was Your Battle to Win. My name is Jared, and I was doing the show with my mom, Joni Lecky. You can go ahead and find us on Facebook at Your Battle to Win. Just search us up there. There should be a purple logo, and you can find us right there. We broadcast every Sunday from... my phone is saying 7 p.m., but I think it's because we're in a different time zone. We go from 6 to 8.
Pacific Standard Time.
PST. But thank you guys so much for tuning in. We will see you next week talking about Everything for the Win Part 2. We will see you guys very soon. Thank you so much for tuning in.